Greetings to all of you this evening. Thank you for coming out and for singing and praying together already. And the topic is that's assigned to me is honoring our elders. Thank you for reading from Luke. I want to mention just a little bit about that reading before I go on. I want to point out a couple of things that Simeon and Anna did and were. First, some of the things they did, and they were very old. In case you're wondering how old very old is, it's 85. That's biblical. It's right there in the text. Anna was 85, and she was very old. So now you know. There's a lot of sort of skirting around that issue, and I'm so pleased to show you where that line is. So, something that Simeon did that was important for a very old man to do is he consoled. He prayed for the consolation of Israel. He blessed God that he was able to see the Messiah. And he prophesied. He declared, and prophecy means several different things. It can mean foretelling events, but a more important thing for us, and more often prophecy will mean this, it means to speak out the truth. You see a situation, and it's not just any old truth you speak out, it is the most important truth for that situation. And that's harder to do than you think. So you got to listen to older people because it takes a lifetime to learn how to do that. Because anybody can just say some true things, but you want to say a prophetic truth? That's not so easy. It takes wisdom, and you only get wisdom by making a lot of mistakes first. And something that both Simeon and Anna did is they gave thanks. And that's a really important thing for everyone. But when your skills and your abilities start shrinking, then you focus on the things you can still do really well. And I haven't found anybody alive, no matter how old they are, who hasn't been able to do these things that are listed here. It is culturally significant that Simeon and Anna were advanced in years in this story. Because in this situation and in this land and in this time, older people were understood to have wisdom. And wisdom was a really important thing to want and to aspire to. Some of the other sort of side things with this story that I really like is that there was a man and a woman who were prophets here. This is the first time in Luke's account that Gentiles are mentioned. And they're mentioned in a very important light that Jesus would be, not just for his own people, the Jews, but also for the whole world. That was an important truth, not just any old truth there. It affects every single one of us here today. Honor. Let's just do a little, got to do the little dictionary thing. Honor is can be both a noun and a verb. As a noun, it means to have respect or prestige. And as a verb, it can be to esteem, to admire, or it can mean simply to keep an agreement. Like I honor my word and I show up at 7:45, not at whatever I said. No, you show up when you said, not at whatever. That get that right. Yeah. Well, I have some observations to make, and then I have a few little examples that I want to give. And the effort this evening for me is to point out to you that honoring elders is not always a chore. That there's some really pleasing and interesting things that we can do and learn by associating with old people. I have a friend who spent 40 years of his life in Burkina Faso living in a little tiny village with some people who wear loincloths and stuff, you know, it's just, they're out there. They don't read and write, but he's been showing them who Jesus is. And I asked him about, you know, who's in charge of the village? You know, who's, is there a mayor or something? And he said, well, not really, but kind of. It is the oldest man alive. And the oldest person is the most important one in this village, and then the second, and then the third, and on down. And I said, you mean it doesn't, like, what if the oldest person is, you know, kind of quirky or, you know, it's just really a bad judge of, you know, things to say and do. And he said, it doesn't matter. It's about age, not about intellectual process. And he has a longer beard than I do, and he is the third oldest man in the village now. And he grew up over here by Newton, spent the first 20 years of his life there, but almost all the rest of it over in that village. So I don't know what he'll do once he's the oldest person and very much in charge. But I thought that was interesting to think about. And that stands in contrast with maybe popular culture here in this country. Burkina Faso's in Africa, by the way. That's, you know, totally different. Here, it's not so much about who's the oldest as... Well, I'm not sure what it is about. I thought about a verse in Proverbs, that one in Proverbs 20, 29. It says, the glory of young men is their strength. And then it's something about the glory of old men is their gray hair or their hoary head, maybe it is. And in thinking about that, our culture tends to emphasize maybe the experience of younger people, and it might go more towards feelings and emotions and excitement over maybe wisdom and experience. Now, it's not cut and dried, but the emphasis seems to be a little more there here. And I think it is biblical, and not just good sense, to be able to appreciate what people have to offer at every stage of their life. Some of the thoughts I had on maybe how one honors, gives honor, we had the dictionary thing, the esteem and admire. One of the ways that I like to be treated, and then I also find I get good responses from other people and also from old people, older people. I don't want to be offensive, but I'm just going to say old people because if I say that to Lizzie, she gets all upset. I have to use a euphemism, and I'm not into euphemisms so much. But understanding what is wanted and needed, and I guess for her it's getting a euphemism for old. Hospitality is an important thing to think about at every stage of our lives, and especially to people who are in the second half of their life. I think it's really important to observe what other people are doing and their emotional state and what they're thinking about. And to respond to that, not just notice, but if there's someone who needs help, it's a very good thing to be able to do that without being too difficult, you know, or complicated or drawing attention to the problem or something. When I was a little boy, I was maybe about Vincent's age, and I was a show-off. And I remember some older people came to visit, and I took them up into our barn in Wisconsin, and I was going to show them how I could climb up the rope swing all the way up to the track, you know, way up there. And I took off up there because I could really climb. And then I don't know what I was doing. I was goofing around, and I somehow twisted like a half hitch around my wrist. And suddenly I was like hanging from that, and I could not get away. And I was terribly embarrassed, and I was too embarrassed to ask for help, but this really tall Rick guy, he was there, and he saw that I was having trouble, and he said, here, let me help you, and he just reached out and pushed up on the bottom of my feet a little bit, and so I could get that undone, and I got down, and I was very happy to still have my hand, you know, it was hurting a lot. But that's an example. He's an example that I never forgot, because he did not embarrass me. He simply saw I needed help, and he helped me just in the kindest, most innocuous way. And things went on. And oddly enough, you know, maybe that didn't happen much to me, or I didn't see enough of that, but that really stuck with me. And I think that's an important part of responding to people when they need help, is to do it in a perfectly kind, helpful way. I think it's important to learn to serve well. I love feeding people. I just like, you know, like watching the food go in, you know, however it goes. You know, somehow that really makes me happy. So, you know, when I was at Bible school at Calvary, we'd take turns sometimes, somehow. There was an event in which I got to serve people, and I really like that. And I think that's probably more helpful maybe sometimes with older people who might not be able to jump up and sprint over to the salad bar and back again so easily. And I was reminded of that. I was at a meeting up at Pine Village in at Mound Ridge. It's an old people's home there. And we had this meeting, and there was nice food catered over here, and there were tables, and people from different nursing homes came together, and they had this keynote speaker, and it's all about, you know, the politics of growing old in Kansas. And kind of at the end, I was sitting with this older guy, and I saw he had a little cane, you know. Otherwise, he didn't look like he was all that decrepit. And when it's time for dessert, they had sheet cake, and it was chocolate. And that was it, just sheet cake, chocolate, plonk, you know, on your little thing there. And I really thought it would be better if you know, we could go over to the cafeteria, and there was fruit over there, and I thought I should, like, take some strawberries, you know, to jazz it up a little bit. And I thought, well, you know, if I did that, well, it looked kind of selfish. So I asked him if he'd like a chocolate cake with some strawberries on it, and he agreed he did. And so I went over and got enough for everybody, you know. When you're doing it for someone else, you can just break a lot of rules, actually. You know, and then you're a beneficiary as well. I'm just, you know, this is details that are good to know. And then I realized, you know, this is a perfect moment to have some coffee. You know, you sip of hot coffee, black, and then a little bit of chocolate cake with a little bit of strawberry back, and ooh, sip, you know, nibble, blah, ooh. And so I asked him if he wants some coffee, and he's like, yeah. And so, you know, I did all that, we had our talk, and then when we were leaving, he's like, here, I have something for you. And he gave me $2. Here's your tip, he said. I was a waiter, actually. And I know, you know, how important it is to look after people, and you got exactly what I wanted, and I didn't even want to ask for it, and you got it for me. So it was fun. I got the best dessert. He got a good dessert. Everybody felt good. That's just, you know, it works for everyone, but especially for people who can't sprint to the salad bar. I have found that simply appreciating people is one of the skills that is helpful. And when you've got a young person, you know, and you talk really fast, you know, over here, and I can't even understand you, and, you know, Harvey for sure doesn't know what you're saying, but if you listen a little bit, you will notice that the older people in this church and just about everywhere, their humor was different, you know, about 100 years ago when they were young. It was different. People just didn't, you know, they laughed at different stuff. They did irony a little bit more. Like, irony would be David, you know, everybody used to have nicknames, and I don't know what they all were, but David L. here, you know, he's kind of tall. His nickname very likely would have been Shorty. And that was really funny to a lot of people. And I had a grandfather, his name was Gideon Eli Utsi, so it would be Gideon E. Utsi, and his nickname was General Electric, for GE. And people used to call him that, and they would just laugh and carry on, yeah. So if you kind of understand the humor of a generation, and it changes from generation to generation because each generation has to invent something a little different so that we know that we're not part of them, we're part of this. But sometimes it's funny to tap into that because if you wait two generations, then you can do the same thing again and it's okay. not back to back, but it skips one or two. So you could learn really cool things, and then you could sort of work them into your talk that nobody understands, and it would be fun. So that's just a tip. You get that for free here. The other thing is, I think people with personality quirks are really interesting. And so I encourage people to develop those. And it's not to the point where you're like asocial, you know, where people just wish you would go away. But you know, if you have some odd little thing, just embrace it. Don't be ashamed about it, you know, and worry about it so much. Because the least interesting people are the ones who are most concerned about being maybe polite, too polite, maybe like refined, that kind of polite. Like, we want everyone to be polite in the sense of being thoughtful of other people. But if you're thinking about yourself a lot, then you're not as interesting to other people. That's just kind of a rule of thumb I have learned. So older people sometimes have funky quirks that are really fun to observe. And several people I'm thinking about now are, you know, Ken Marietta. She has a father, and I can't think of his name. Someone help me.
Eli.
Eli is the most down-at-the-mouth curmudgeon I know. You're nodding, see? I have agreement here. And it's to the point where, you know, I ask, how are you? And I do this whenever I have a chance because I always want to see what he says. And he'll say, well, my leg hurts, but at least I can't see anymore, you know. And the hogs are out, and, you know, it's just, the young folks are going, everything's just wrong. You know, the glass is not only half empty, it's got poison in it for him. And somehow that tickles me. I don't know where he learned to do that. And he had a hard life. He had a lot of difficult things. But he's sort of developed it as there's a little bit of humor in it, the way he does it. And then we are today. I want just a moment of silence for Eli Mass, because they're leaving today. They've been here over 70 years, Eli and Lydia not quite as long. And I just love going to listen to Eli because he is the master of malaprops. And that's when you say something and you use the word that isn't quite the right word, but it means something else, kind of. And I think that's just hilarious. And as much as I try to do it, I can't do that. That's just a special gift that Eli has, and I'm going to miss that. So those are things. And, you know, I really enjoy listening to stories about old people. Somehow, somebody told me something about Sam Dealey. And that would be, let me see. Yeah, wait. Half of your great-grandmother, I think, and the other half's just the grandmother. And she was a character. She came from Stewart's Draft or someplace. Illinois. Okay, Illinois, but not from here. And she married Sam, and they were somehow, they equaled each other out in the most unusual way. And I just love hearing stories about her. You know, you have to sort of focus on one person at a time so you get it right. So I encourage you down here to ask somebody, and you can't just ask and then let it go. You have to really drill in and say, now, I want to know an embarrassing story about this person. Because, you know, we tend to think we should just say the nice, sanitized versions, but there are so many sanitized stories out there that if you want to really connect, you want to have a real one, you know, with some warts on it and a little bit of variety and like a mistake or two to learn a lesson from, of course, that's the kind of thing you want. Well, let me see, where am I here? Got kind of focused on Sam Dealey there. I want to tell you just briefly about my great-grandmother, my maternal great-grandmother. Her name was Elizabeth Hirschberger until she married Noah Kaufman. And they lived in Plain City, and Noah died when he was in 1929. And in 1930, Elizabeth's daughter Anna married my grandfather, G.E., General Electric Utsi, and they took up housekeeping on the home farm, and Widow Elizabeth lived with my grandmother and grandfather there because, well, that just made the most sense. And there she was, and she really didn't have a lot to do, and she was not very healthy anymore. She couldn't go out much. And she had a row of children. Abe was the Bishop of Sharon. He was a founding father there. There was Irvin that they called Pat, and Elmer, and Marianne, who married Eli Beachy, and Ida, and then Anna and Maddie. But almost all of those people, all of her children, they got cars. And you would have thought it would have been easier for them to come back and visit, you know, visit Elizabeth, who didn't have a car. But they didn't. They had a lot of important things to do. In any case, whatever the case may be, Elizabeth sat by the window a lot, and she looked out. She could see out the driveway, and she would say, you know, I really wish somebody would come visit me. And then she'd forget that she'd said that, and 5 minutes later she'd say that again. And she sat there pining away. She lived 12 years with Anna. And Anna was, you know, I think she got tired of it. Like my grandmother probably got tired of her sadness and complaining sometimes. But she did notice that not many people came to visit her. And it became very deeply ingrained in Anna that is a basic responsibility of members of a community. And so she had a circuit that she would do. And not all of her children like going with her to go visit the shut-ins and the old people. But my mom kind of liked it because they were quirky, and they once in a while they'd say something really interesting. And so about every 2 months, this was after they moved to Buchanan County, she would get my mom to help her hitch up the buggy, and they would bake some fresh bread, and they would take some produce from their garden, and they would make the rounds. And some of the people they visited were Joe and Lydia Schrock. Now, Lydia lived in a wheelchair. She really did because she couldn't walk anymore. And she had diabetes, sugar diabetes, they used to call it. And one of her toes had fallen off from the sugar diabetes. And so they'd go there and they'd bring them a loaf of bread. And then they'd sit and they'd talk. And and Joe Schrock is Lydia, our oldest member here. Joe Schrock is Lydia's uncle. Just in case you want to know that. So we're connected. Anyway, and Joe used to always have bees, and he would do honey. And so always they'd buy some honey, a gallon of honey or 5 gallons of honey or whatever. That's where they got their honey, because that was part of the action, you know. And then they'd sit there, and they'd look at that missing toe, and they'd have to talk about that, you know, how that fell off and whether the other ones had any chance of surviving or not, you know. And it was kind of gruesome, but also kind of quirky and interesting. And my mom, one time, she ate some wonderful rhubarb cake that Lydia had made, and they liked it so well, they asked for the recipe, and we still benefit from that recipe to this day. And if you're really lucky and you're guests over at my mom and dad's house, you'll get rhubarb cake just the way Lydia, in her wheelchair, with the diabetes and the toe falling off, used to make it. And then they go over to Alvin Lissy Helmuth. And she was from Plain City as well. And she was a widow. And the thing you always did when you went to her house after you visited and everything is you bought one of those really large, oversized stainless steel chore balls that you can't get at the IGA that you use for scrubbing those huge stainless steel pots that you have to cook for everybody if you're Amish, you know. So cleaning and the chore ball, that was an important thing to do. And then they'd go on over and they'd stop at Dan and Lydia Gingrich's house. And that place, it smelled like death. It was just the sickest smell in there. But that's normal and natural. And it happens to all of us if we live long enough. And so it's good to get a whiff of that.
because then we understand. You know, sometimes writers, long ago, they would collect a skull, all shiny with all, you know, after the worms had eaten all the stuff off, and they'd put it on their desk right here, and then they would dip their pen in here in the ink, and they'd write, and they'd look at that skull once in a while. And you know why they did that? To remind themselves of their mortality. They'd look at that and they'd remember, I am going to die. My life has a distinct length of time here. And if we understand that, it changes everything that we do. Everything we do becomes important because we only have this certain amount of time to do it in. So go visit somebody who's dying and smell, and maybe if you're lucky, you will smell death. And you don't want to linger there, but it's good to know what it smells like. So, what else do we do here? Oh, if people were sick, you know, if Cookie Joe and Maddie's daughter was dying of brain cancer, you'd of course stop and visit them as well. And you'd bring what you had, or you'd buy something from them. And the important thing is not that you stayed long, but you stopped and engaged as a human being with these people and heard interesting things and looked at their missing toe and stuff like that. Now, my mom tells me, and I remember this too, that Melvin Liddy over here, now she doesn't respond like this anymore because, you know, things are taking their course, but you'd ask her, how are you doing? And her answer for years had been, Weil ich bin geblessed. Now remember something about blessing back here? Who was blessing earlier on in the evening? Anna, very old Anna. That was one of the things she did. And here we have one of our own church members doing a biblical thing in her very old age. I remember as a, you know, I was probably 7 or 8 or 9 or maybe 11 or something, and I had no idea about unicycles or juggling at that time, but I knew about Helen Pine because we would go visit her pretty often. And Helen Pine, she stood about this tall, and it made me feel good because I'd stand near her and I was as tall as she was, and she was old, and she had had polio. And so she was one of the crookedest people I knew as a little boy. I mean, her one shoulder was here, the other one was way down here. You know, like one side of her was just shrunken. And she was kind of an amazing thing to look at because of that. But what really sticks out to me is how cheerful she was. She could just barely walk. But she was always so happy when we'd come. And she would talk again about how blessed she was and how wonderful God was for her. And this is the best part. Every single time we'd visit, when we were about to go, she would give my mom a dollar bill for all of you to go out and have ice cream cones with. Yeah, you can bet we were always in favor of visiting Helen Pine for kind of low reasons, but hey, this is just a tip, you know. It's kind of like Freddie used to give those little candies to the children who, they were Smarties, to children who would say their verse. You know, you can really influence children with sugar is the lesson we learn here. Now I want to talk about a few other interesting old people in our family's life, just to give you, in case you have not had the pleasure of interacting with old people who are a little unusual, so that you maybe start making a mental list tonight about people you might want to go visit just to find out what they'll say or what they did or what they'll do. And I want to dwell for a moment on Otto Hill. Otto Hill was our neighbor back in Missouri. And I used to go up there to see him once in a while. He lived there. He was an old man, and he was the closest thing to a hillbilly that we Mennonites had ever seen in our lives. He had about 3 yellow tusks for teeth, and they were kind of crooked. And he shaved probably once a month, and he had just kind of, he was a he used to be a big, strong man, and now he was just kind of this amazing kind of stick figure in overalls. That's what he was. And he had a wife when we first came. Rose was her name, and nobody knew how old she was because she did not tell anyone, and then she got Alzheimer's and she forgot herself. And one of the things she used to do is when she'd get mixed up is she'd walk up down the road, across the bridge, and up to our mailbox, and she'd steal our mail. Twice she got the milk check. And the good thing here, this is why you want to cultivate relationships with older people, is that at that time, Michael, Paul, and Joseph, they would, you know, they'd need to get out and, you know, work off some energy. So going up to visit Otto and Rose was a good thing to do. And they'd go up there, chat with them, and they would tease Humpty Dumps, who was the black rat terrier. And later on, when he died, he was 18 years old. That's what Otto would always say. Then a white corgi came to visit, and his name was Wooks. And Wooks was not pleased at all with Paul because he would poke him with Otto's cane when Otto would go out into the kitchen to get some popcorn to bring to the boys. And he was an amazing guy, you know, after... Anyway, they would go down, and they would visit, and then we would spot our mail, and then they would get it, you know, when nobody's looking, and bring it back again, you know, to save embarrassment and everything. And also, we needed the money, you know. But anyway, Otto had this wonderful thing. He batched for many years after Rose died. She had to go to a nursing home, and then she died. And then he was alone, and he loved when we'd come visit him. And so the little boys would come up and he'd say, "Oh, here you are again, you little hammerheads." And he'd say, he was a coarse guy, and they learned words that, you know, my mom didn't allow them to repeat very often. But he blessed, they blessed him. And in return, he blessed them with amazing stories. He had a black kettle that he didn't wash, because you don't wash cast iron kettles. You know, they're seasoned, and his was seasoned about a half inch thick with just kind of crusty, lardy stuff. He would make coffee in there. He'd just put the coffee grounds in there, and then he would boil it, you know, with the water, and then he'd pour it out, and he would take a swig, and then he would sort of strain, you know, some of the coffee grounds and spit out between two tusks over here. And just sort of over there, and there was an area on the wooden floor that just, it looked like it was growing coffee grounds. It was, you know, not your typical beachy Amish kitchen. And the boys would sit there, you know, and they'd look at that, you know, with just amazement. You know, it was just an amazing, it's like going to a museum and seeing this amazing fossil or something. And then he'd use that same thing, and he'd make popcorn in there. He'd just swish out the coffee, and he'd put popcorn in there and some grease. And it somehow kind of worked for him. And the boys would eat that popcorn, and it had the most unusual flavor. But, you know, you learn to eat a lot of stuff. And he had always had cornbread, and it looked like it was related to bricks. But that's what he had, and he would soften it with that coffee, and that was mostly what he ate in his his last years, except my mom would send down bread and other things, and he would very appreciatively gnaw on that as well. One of the things that Paul did, I'd sort of forgotten this, but I was talking with him about this evening, but, Paul would take his Bible up there and read to him out of his Bible, and that's a wonderful thing to do for just about anybody, and it works even better when young people, like 10 or under, do that, because most older people really like having young people around. Young people, it's like there's sort of a vitality and a glow and an energy that reminds them of some of their best days. And so that was a wonderful counterpoint to some of the stories that Otto Hill would say. His stories tended to not be biblical. They always involved J.W. Nifong, and we didn't know if that was an imaginary friend or a real one, but it would be like, "Yeah, back in the day we went out and we were hunting for deer. And I shot this nice buck over there by that oak tree, and then I came over there and put my gun down and got the rope out of my pocket and tied it around the deer to hang it up and skin it. And wouldn't you know, about that time he came alive, and he started tearing off, and there I was hanging onto that rope, and that deer, he started going around that oak tree. And he was going around, and he was wrapping me, and I had to run around and around. And finally, I got a loop over his antlers and got him stuck. And I yelled for J.W. Nifong to come, and J.W. came, and he cut his throat, and he bled to death. And there I was, hanging on for dear life. That's his kind of story. And then, to top it off, he said, and we looked all over that deer, and the only bullet hole we could find was through his ear. Yeah, that's the kind of stories you could get if you could just find the local Otto Hill. Yeah. And he'd talk about railroad bridges. He used to build railroad bridges. He was a hot riveter. They'd go, once in a while, Paul would get permission to go with him to go seine for catfish down at Swan Lake. And he, every bridge they go by, he'd say, I built that bridge back in 43, or I built that one, you know. And he'd talk about how many rivets he'd done in his lifetime. And some of the old people that knew him said he was an amazingly strong man and that he could lift I-beams by himself that two people couldn't lift by, you know, together if it wasn't for him. So, fun stories, huh? Interesting things to learn. I want to just talk about a couple of different people here. I should stop. Really, I should stop and see if you have anything useful to say in response. Okay, just raise your hand and butt in if you think of something. We did something I really enjoyed. Our small group here a couple weeks ago, we decided we're going to go into the Mennonite Friendship Communities, to the nursing home there, and we're going to sing. We're going to sing in there. And first we went to Katie Schrock's room. Katie Schrock is Fina Schrock's widow. Fina's just died about, a month ago maybe. And so she lives in there because she can't get around and she needs help. And there is, you know, you look at her and you think, you know, maybe not everything, you know, the lights are on, you know, but she does notice things quite well. And we introduced ourselves, all of us, and one of our people thought, what's the point? Because she won't know or remember anyway. Now, she might not have got it all straight, but she is convinced that I am William Bontrager. And she keeps asking my mom when she goes back, what was William Bontrager doing with you singing there? So, you know, funny little things like that happen. But she did say, I really like that singing. She said, so hot, sure an lot gmien zu mich. And I believe it did. And I think it's worthwhile spending a little time. After we were done there, we walked over through the kitchen or the dining room area, and we spotted Lena Beachy, I think. Helmuth, thank you. Yes, Lena Helmuth. And we just borrowed her and drove her on around there and parked her over by Edwin's room. And we pulled Edwin out there and we sang for him too. The whole bunch of us, loud. I mean, people heard us all the way down at the nurse's station. And a couple people in wheelchairs kind of crept up, kind of at the edge so nobody would see them to see what was going on. And then Edwin was trying to say something, and he can't talk very clearly anymore, so I had to put my ear right down by his mouth. And then I heard, he said, I thought the people at center had forgotten me. So he was moved by our singing. And I'm so glad we went for that. And he's not at a stage where he can offer a lot of audible blessings. But I really enjoyed hearing his comments back when he could speak. And it's well worth sharing some emotional space with people who maybe are past the stage of speaking well. When my grandfather Gideon, G.E. again, was old and a widower, my mom would go visit him, and she'd take Charity along, Charity here, and Charity was just, pretty young then. And Gideon really liked Charity, and he would tell Charity things he would not tell my mom. And he would ask her questions that he wouldn't ask my mom questions. Because, you know, we're skipping the generation thing. You remember that thing about, you know, it works that way, kind of. So if you can find somebody not just one generation back like your parents, but two back like your grandparents or somebody else's grandparents even, that's better. You can make connections and you can hear stuff that maybe they wouldn't tell their children. And that's pretty interesting sometimes. Because people, no matter how old they were, they all started out as children and they all did foolish and interesting things that are good lessons for you about what not to do now. And if you're in just the right mode, you can hear stories like that, and they're instructive and helpful. One of the things that I got, you know, I was not directly involved, but for some reason, well, I guess it was money. My mom and my sisters, they did house cleaning back, 20 or 30 or 40 years ago, I guess. And they tended to do house cleaning for people who'd gotten old enough that they couldn't bend over all the way to get to the corners where the dust was. And so they were getting towards Anna's age, you know, not quite 85 yet. And then they'd keep doing that, maybe once every 2 weeks, until they got old, and a whole raft of the house cleaning ladies died. And so it was kind of like you weren't just cleaning their house, but you were making sure that they had enough to eat, and maybe you'd take them out to get groceries, and then you'd call their children, and you got really involved. And we still talk about these characters. They're important in our family history. You know, like that little old lady, was it Fern White who chain smoked all the way to age, 91 or something? Like, how could that be? And how awful that smelled. You need to know how bad it smells when people smoke cigarettes. One of the fun things that I noticed is when my niece Anna from Pantego, North Carolina, came out to visit here. She's 16 or 17. She spent a week with her grandma, you know, to have some grandma time, and then grandma took her to visit, you know, her friends, and they're all pretty old. Surprise, surprise, huh? And they're, some of them are relatives, and they all had just sort of funny, odd things happen. It was just sort of like a string of unusual events. And Anna thought it was the most interesting thing ever, and so she went home. And I know this because I visit Pantego once in a while. They have characters down there, really unusual people. There's Keith and Rosa Mae Mullet, and they're ancient, and they're both kind of Alzheimer-ish now, and they live with their daughter Elizabeth, who's a little older than me, and she is just full of ideas and interesting things. And Rosa Mae, she's about 10 years older than Keith, but she always was very proud to explain to people when she could remember that she went to EMC and got a degree there, and that was really important for her. So now Anna goes and visits them and brings them vegetables and talks with them and brings home fun stories. Like Elizabeth decided it would be interesting. She likes animals. She wanted betta fish. And she got a male betta fish and a female betta fish and an aquarium and all the gear. And she's trying to raise betta fish. And wouldn't you know, somehow they got betta fish. I don't know, do they hatch with their eggs? But there were like 200 little tiny betta fish all swimming around in there. And then Elizabeth had to go and she got a day sitter in. You know, an elderly lady that was still more capable to look after her mom and dad while she went down to buy some groceries and to spend a little time herself. Well, that day sitter, she looked at that aquarium and she saw that it looked kind of cloudy and scummy in there. And then she saw this hose thingy, you know, you could suck out the dirt. And she thought she'd be just real helpful. And she would just clean that aquarium. And she cleaned, you know, the muck out and down the drain. And it was pretty clean. And by the time Elizabeth came home, it looked much better. And she proudly told her, and Elizabeth was just completely discombobulated because she had suckered out almost all of those 100-plus baby bettas and down the sink. And then Anna showed up, just after the day sitter left, and so she heard the whole four-part massacre with all everything. It was the most unusual story she'd heard all day. It was well worth the trouble. So that's the sort of stuff that's in store for you. If you just take a little time, block off a little time to go visit an unusual person, and most unusual people are elderly. You can learn archaeology. They cleaned out, Anna helped clean Rosa May's bedroom, and they said, Elizabeth said she wasn't allowed to do it, and that it had been 17 years since the last cleaning, and so it was like a lesson in archaeology for her. Fun stuff. We're almost out of time, aren't we? I had a wonderful story repeated to me, and I have permission to tell it because the perpetrators, one of them is still alive and here tonight. But about 2 months ago, I got invited to Willard's house for a meal, and it was with Mandy and with Harvey. And Willard made it for us, and it was pig in a blanket, and it was pretty good. And so we ate our pig in the blankets, and we had our peaches, and we had noodles, and we had French wieners in the noodles. And it was good, and we were visiting. And then I looked at Harvey, and I thought, you know, Harvey probably eats pig in a blanket all the time because it's kind of fun and easy, and he cooks for himself. And I asked him, when's the last time you had pig in a blanket? And he thought a little bit, and he said, well, it was in 1956. I was like, 1956? How do you remember this stuff? And he said, I remember this real well because Edna and I, we were newly, not quite newly, but young married, and we were invited out to Brother Perry's house, and that's out where Levon's live, I think. Went all the way out there, and it was somebody's birthday party or something, and they had pig in a blanket, and it was good, and we ate that. But then on the way home, we both got sick simultaneously, and Edna vomited out her side of the buggy, and I vomited out my side of the buggy. And so we just never had pig in a blanket again after that, until tonight. So we had him call us after he got home, just to make sure he got home okay. See, all you have to do is ask an innocent question. Old people say interesting stuff because what else can they do? My grandfather Gideon, he had a driving horse, and he would shoe it himself. You know, you have to change the shoes every 6 weeks maybe. And some of the grandchildren are like, let us do it. You know, you're kind of old. I mean, how can you do that anyway? And I really like what he said. He said, well, the way I do it is I just do one hoof at a time. It's a lot easier that way. Here's a how-to guide. This is what I have for people who are expecting to maybe get old. And then how to make it more like to attract, you know, interesting people to come visit you when you're like in your wheelchair and your toes falling off and stuff. And this is my list, and it's not in a particular order, but I say embrace your quirks. Don't try to just fit and be exactly like everybody else. You know, if you can ride a unicycle 6 feet tall, ride it. And juggle while you're doing it. That's a quirk, good quirk. Learn to observe, learn to listen, learn to look, to look carefully, to listen carefully, and learn to think, because those are things that we can do. We're human beings. Those are our special gifts. Other animals are not as good at that as we are. And if we can do that well, then we can contribute something unusual and interesting and good to conversations. And what it's about here is not about being able to speak well, like I'm doing tonight, talk. That's not what it's about. That doesn't make a good life. What makes a person desirable and wanted and makes a good community life is if you learn how to speak well in a conversation. Conversations are the most important things that we do with our mouths. And so that means that we listen carefully and we contribute interesting things to the conversation. I learned this from going down to a music festival, a bluegrass festival a long time ago. And I was, and what happens is musicians will sit in a circle and they'll start playing, and they'll play a tune everybody knows, and they're all doing their different things going along there, and then maybe the person that's kind of in charge, because he brought the food, and it's his campfire, he'll just point like you, and then you know that you are kind of on, and you do a little more, and you do wiggles and twists and fun things with the thing. And you go on like that all the way around the circle. And these, I would listen, I'd try to figure out, what's the key to doing that well? And they said, this is like a conversation. The people who are virtuosos don't necessarily do this well at all, and we don't like them. The people who have to just grandstand all the time. It's when you listen to the music, and then you respond to it. And you don't say the same thing back. Like, it's really weird when people do that, you know, just like parrot you all the time. But you respond appropriately, and you respond with that in mind, and that's conversation. You can do it in music, you can do it with talking, you can do it with working as well. Work can be a conversation. Those are important things to learn, and you do that by observing everybody, and old people often have that down better than young people. Befriend someone who needs you. Never mind if they can't invite you back or do things for you. They'll have something. You'll get a gift. It'll be a good one, I tell you. Learn to tell stories. That's something old people can do well. And it'll help you turn into an interesting older person. Exercise your imagination. When your hearing starts fading away, if you don't have any imagination, you know what you'll say? You'll say, huh? What did you say? Pardon me? Excuse me, please? On and on. That gets really tedious. What you want is imagination. And then just answer whatever you wish they would have said. It's a trick, and I'm cluing you in tonight, only this time, and for free. And with that, learning to tell stories, tell about your mistakes, about when you were embarrassed, when you were hurt, when you got into trouble. There's too many whitewash stories in the world already, so just go right in and go where it hurts and where you were embarrassed, where you had strong feelings. That's what people want to know anyway. If you're parents and you have children and they're like, there's nothing to do, wonderful thing to do is load them up and go visit some old person. It's a skill. It's a learned skill, just like juggling, how to interact with people. And you want to learn how to interact with anybody you meet, not just with people that are exactly your size and your gender and with your interests. That can be helpful, but it's not the whole world. And so I'm going to say that, you know, even if you don't feel like it, we talk about money a lot and we say, well, you know, you have to tithe your money. You know, God gives it to you, so 10% should go to other people. Well, I'm going to say that more important tithings that we have in our lives are our time and our attention and our interest. And so even if you don't feel like it, I will submit to you that it's biblical and right, and that the payback is good, to tithe your time and make time for older people. You'll be blessed. Thank you for your attention, and it's late, so we'll stop.